of our best Twitter followers, one of our best pals on Twitter is at Rockies versus Connor, who retweeted something that I want to start the show with today. Wow. Quote, "The Rockies won major points for imagination when they gave Todd Helton a champion cutting horse named a true busta move during his farewell ceremony. Helton still has a custom-made saddle to commemorate the occasion, but in a sad postscript to the story, the horse, nicknamed Busta, suffered an infection in its leg and died in April."
Dude.
That is so depressing.
Dude.
Jerry Krasnick, holy cow, man.
The Rockies are in first place, and that's how you hit people with the beginning of this podcast?
Dude, no, we're not going to. There's no happiness here. We're not going to give people. Not going to give people reason to be happy.
I close my eyes.
Only for a moment, and a moment's gone.
Is it Michael McDonald
yeah,
doing Kansas?
I don't know why it's a Michael McDonald voice there.
Yamo be there, man.
Yamo be there. Hey,
anyway,
welcome in.
Hi.
Hi, everybody. Welcome in to the latest edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. My name is Tyler Mon.
And my name is Anthony Masterson. And the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, like the Ohio
like
State
the
University.
The Ohio State University.
Do not take any imitators.
Episode number 73 of this show, and I could not be more excited for all y'all to listen to
it's
the rest of the
show
today, because this is, without a doubt, the most adorable edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast that we have ever recorded.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it is Mother's Day coming up on Sunday, and Anthony had the idea this week that we should try to bring a mother on the show. So, coming up in just a little bit, my mom joins the show, and I could not be more excited.
Yeah.
I just texted my mom. We got done recording the interview. I texted and said, that could not have been more fun. And she responded and said, I loved every minute of it, which for my mom, that sentence probably took 30 minutes to type out in a text message.
It was hilarious.
I love that.
Yeah. She got some good jabs in it, you too.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Because I love making you feel like less of a man.
People wonder where I get my self-deprecating humor. It's because everybody has made fun of me my entire life.
It's because I was always deprecated growing up.
No, my mom is the world's greatest mom. Everybody else's mom can be 1A. My mom is number one. So Lucille Mon joins the show coming up a little bit later on. And let's get to some Rockies baseball talk. What happened yesterday? I didn't hear anything about it.
I believe it is yours, mine, and our first place Colorado Rockies.
Hey!
And I believe last night they scored a couple of runs in one single frame. It was a pretty good day. It was a 13-run fifth inning at AT&T Park, at Alphabet Park.
Franchise record.
A house of horrors most of the time for the Colorado Rockies. Last night, they turned it into a funhouse carnival. And it was a 17-7 win. Just the fifth time the Rockies have ever beaten a division foe by 10 or more on the road. The first time since 2013.
Pretty amazing.
That was a fun one. And yet, still, in true Rockies fashion, staked to a 14-run lead, the starting pitcher couldn't make it through five.
Yay!
In line for the victory. So, you know, Chris Russon, yeah, you had your chance.
And the Rockies,
7 runs on 13 hits and 4 and a third.
They're 17 runs, the second most they've scored on the road ever in franchise history. They scored 19 at Houston on September 25th of 2011. That was also the most runs scored in an inning by any team, not just the Rockies, since the D-backs scored 14 in the fourth inning against the Pirates on April 11th of 2010. Most in a single inning in franchise history. Yeah, that was
like 1,000 men to the plate, I think.
Yeah, basically.
1,000, yeah.
Charlie Blackmon was the only one who did not bat twice in that inning because he batted ninth coming up. So they sent 17 batters to the plate. It was the worst inning in the history of that ballpark for the San Francisco Giants.
Good. Good.
Also,
and then the Seagulls came late and sit on the bones of the innocent.
That's what's so funny about these games this year. They played that, what was it, a 13-inning game? And the Seagulls looked furious having to wait for that game to be over. And I tweeted this out last night. I've been to San Francisco twice now-ish. Nate Kreckman and I went to a Giants-Dodgers game in 2008, 4th of July weekend, which was a whole ton of fun because, A, Nate Kregman's my favorite human being on the planet. B, we got to go to a Giants-Dodgers game, which is amazing because everybody, that was still back in the, oh, the Yankees-Red Sox, that's the apex of sports. Dodgers-Giants is a better rivalry than Yankees-Red Sox. Dodgers-Giants, those people loathe each other. With Yankees-Red Sox, it's like, yes. Oh, look at all these rich people pretending to be disliking each other. Dodgers-Giants, those people, that's visceral.
I live in Los Angeles, and it is, it is harsh. It's something that I didn't realize it was as evil as it was between the two of them, because you know it's like, oh, Los Angeles, they don't care, they get there in the third inning, leave in the seventh, whatever. No, they hate the Giants. And speaking of Lucille Mom, we talk a little bit about that in the interview coming up here in a little while.
It's a very good little tie-in. So I went there then, and then I went there for the 2013 World Baseball Classic, but I tweeted this out last night. The seagulls are like a fun little novelty on television. In person, that's like the Birds, man. That's like a Hitchcock movie. It's terrifying.
Yeah. You don't want to mess with those birds either, because those birds have seen more than you have in your life.
Seen
okay.
Some things, man. Yeah. And some stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, last night was fun. San Diego, not quite as fun, but the Rockies able to get out of town at least with a win. And that helps more than anything. And you're coming off a sweep in Arizona, so you can kind of stomach, I guess, a couple of losses on the road at San Diego. The Rockies could have swept that series. I mean, in all honesty.
Yes, and it was close in each of those games. And then they came out with the victory. And the Rockies now 10-6. On the road this season, just 4-8 at home. They didn't win their 10th game on the road last year until May 25th. And that's even starting 6-0 on the road last year.
That's 20
they started 6-0 on the road last year, and then they lost 10 of their next 11 on the road.
Yeah.
So not their 10th win until May 25th on the road last year. It's only May 6th right now. Things are looking up for the Rockies, and we have basically one person to thank for that. For the most part, the Rockies have 3 shutouts this season.
Dan O'Dowd.
Yes. Well, technically, it was his trade, I believe.
Yeah. Damn it.
But anyway,
I didn't mean it in an actual.
The Rockies have 3 shutouts already this season. They had 4 all of last year and didn't get their third until August the 16th. Now, the one common thread in those 3 shutouts this year, they have all been games started by Tyler Chatwood. Tyler Chatwood has been nothing short of sensational this season. So far, he's a 2.15 ERA, 27 Ks and 37 and two-thirds, a 1.12 whip. He is 4-2 with the pitcher wins overall record, and he is currently on a streak of 24 and two-thirds consecutive scoreless innings on the road. Everything that he has done this year has been exactly what the Rockies were hoping they would get back from Tyler Chatwood, who has missed basically the last 2 years with, I believe, his second Tommy John surgery. It has been a long, long road back for Tyler Chatwood, and he is showing that the Rockies can have some pitching, and when they get some pitching, they can win some baseball games, which is such a novel concept. I cannot believe they didn't think of it sooner.
Yeah. I don't think they've ever thought of it. Based on Instagram comments, I don't think they've ever thought of trying to get good pitching.
No.
Somebody should have told
them. Why would they? Yeah.
Somebody really should have explained that that would be a good thing to have.
Now, the longest scoreless streak on the road for a Rocky starting pitcher was Ubaldo Jimenez, had a 27-inning run back in 2010, which does not even include his no-hitter at that point. It was right after his no-hitter in Atlanta, in fact. So that's pretty good company that Tyler Chatwood's finding himself in right now. At 24 and two-thirds, it is, I think, the 8th longest just in the last 6 years overall on the road. So Tyler Chatwood is proving that Rockies can pitch, and he has been sensational. He's gone at least 6 innings in all but one start this season over his last 2 starts on this road trip, 14 and a third innings, just 8 hits allowed in 14 and a third, 11 strikeouts, just 4 walks. I mean, you didn't know what to expect from Tyler Chatwood coming into the season because the guy coming off of so many injuries, he hadn't pitched in a big league game in a long, long time. I believe it was since the 2014 season, he had not pitched in a big league game. So coming into camp, you assumed he was going to be there, but you didn't know how much you could count on a guy like that with just all the injuries coming back. It's such a hard, hard road to come back from that he really has been doing a lot of work behind the scenes, in the weight room, in the backfield, just getting back to this point right now. And when the Rockies traded for him a few years back for Josh Rutledge, who was the trade? It was the Iannetta trade to bring Tyler Chatwood in before the 2012 season. And you saw what he could do when he got a full season in Colorado back in 2013, 20 starts, a 3.15 ERA. You saw that, okay, he's got a good sinker, he can get a good curveball, can keep the ball on the ground. And then the injuries came up again and missed about 2 years. So you penciled him in the back of the rotation, but you were saying, okay, well, whatever he gives you is going to be a plus. And right now, I mean, this has been unbelievable right now for Tyler Chatwood, what he's given this team so far early in the season. And combined along with Chatwood and Chad Bettis, how amazingly consistent he has been so far. You got John Gray coming in, whiffing dudes like it was nothing. There could be a legitimately solid, I don't want to say legitimate because that's just, you know, it's too much to actually say it without vomiting a little bit. But we could have like a real decent starting pitching staff with the Rockies right now.
That's what's so weird about this team. Like right now, you look at the pitching staff and it's like, huh, they're actually pretty good. They have guys who could be on the way who are potentially pretty good. They have guys who are out right now who, once they get back, are either very good already this season or have been good throughout their careers in Miguel Castro and Jason Mott and Adam Ottavino. What? Like,
yeah, what is happening?
Yeah.
Even everyone's favorite whipping boy is Scott Oberg, because whenever he comes in, everyone just goes crazy. Dude's got a 1.23 earned run average.
I kind of don't get the Scott Oberg
six appearances.
I kind of don't get it. Like, he came in and he gave up that 3-run homer in that one appearance earlier on the season.
His first appearance this year, after giving up a lot of home runs last year, he gave up a home run. I'm like, oh, same old Scott Oberg.
Yeah.
He's gotten 5 consecutive scoreless appearances, including the last 2 innings of last night's ballgame.
Scott Oberg in his minor league career has a minor league ERA of 2.26 in 121 appearances. Yeah, at the major league level, he struggled last year a little bit, an ERA of 5.09 in 64 games, but Scott Oberg's good, man. Like, I think he obviously has a lot of room to improve. He needs some better command on his stuff, but Scott Oberg's, you know, he was a draft pick in 2012. Like, he's not some major league veteran yet. Like, give him a little bit of time.
Yeah, but
I don't know.
I'm usually
on board with hating athletes blindly, but, you know, I like Scott Oberg.
Carlos Estevez has shown some nice flashes as well.
Estevez.
It is Estevez.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. In case you missed that on Twitter this week, Jerry Schemmel went after some people who were ripping on the Rockies broadcasters for saying Estevez. You say the guy's name the way the guy says his name. That's how you respect human beings. Carlos says Estevez. Just because Emilio says Estevez doesn't mean that's his last name. So Estevez. And, oh, by the way, when Vin Scully retires, I'm going to watch Don Arcillo and Mudcat Grant every night because those two are phenomenal together already. But I give a lot of props to Don Arcillo, the new San Diego Padres broadcaster, because he even said Estevez. So obviously doing his research there. But, you know, so in case you're complaining about it.
As did Brendley as well, so for the D-backs broadcast. So, it is Estevez, guys. So just stop. But, no, there are guys that we have seen performing at a very, very high level for this
despite
team over the last couple of weeks.
What the Denver Post tells me about the pitching staff being a puddle of tears.
What's the Rockies misery index looking right now?
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if they update that on days when the Rockies do well.
I would doubt it. Yeah. I would doubt it. By the way, on this road trip right now, we're 7 games into a brutal, brutal road trip, a 10-day road trip to all divisional places, Arizona, San Diego, San Francisco, places where the Rockies don't generally perform well historically. So far, they're 5-2. In that time, the bullpen has a 1.37 earned run average. They've allowed one home run and a 2.22 opponent batting average.
And went into San Diego as, I think, the second worst bullpen in baseball.
Yes.
Cincinnati, I believe, was the worst ERA for a bullpen, then the Rockies, then actually the Padres, which made it so strange that the Padres bullpen was able to nail down a couple of wins back-to-back. But, yeah, that's huge.
I mean,
that's
just
huge.
Just in general, the pitching staff this year, 7.22 ERA at Coors Field, 3.58 on the road.
That's good.
I mean, it
good
is.
Good at baseball. Good at business. Well, half of it, I guess I should say, is good.
The previous low ERA for a road team in Rockies history, 3.71 back in 1995. That's the only team in franchise history to post an ERA below 4 on the road in any given season.
And that is so incredible because that was pinball era Coors Field. I mean, that was the inaugural season at Coors Field, but that was
but that means Curtis how good scanning. They were away from Coors Field at that point.
Yeah.
And that's the team made the playoffs that year.
Yeah.
So right now the team is carrying a 3.58 ERA on the road, and that includes giving up 7 runs in last night's game.
That's pretty amazing.
This team is showing signs that it can sustain. And if you don't want to say that You don't believe in Tyler Chatwood for a full season. Right now, he's second among National League pitchers in wins above replacement behind Jake Arrieta, which is absolutely hilarious. If you don't believe in Chad Bettis doing this the whole season, if you don't think John Gray can keep it up, or if they don't, you don't like the back end of the rotation with Eddie Butler or whatever, the Chris Russon, Christian Bergman, you know, whatever you got. But there are signs here to take away that there should be optimism in the Rockies camp. The whole point of this season was to take steps in the right direction. Nobody here is saying the Rockies are going to win the NL West this year, but at this rate, the NL West is crap anyway.
It's kind of wide open.
Three teams are 500 right now. Obviously, it's May 6th. This isn't like we're saying here in September and saying, oh, the Rockies are only a couple games out of first. No, that's not the case, and it won't be the case. The Giants will be good. The Dodgers will be good. And then we'll see where the chips may fall. But the whole point of 2016 was to take steps in the right direction and see who you were going to keep on the team going forward. And so far, I think we're seeing everything we need to right now. And oh, by the way, Jeff Hoffman is destroying AAA pitching, AAA hitters right now in the Pacific Coast League. David Dahl is crushing in AA. Kyle Freeland is pitching lights out in Hartford as well. And oh, yeah, some guy named Brendan Rodgers is absolutely tearing up the South Atlantic League right now. There are things to be okay with in the Rockies camp right now. This pall of pessimism that falls over everybody once something goes wrong.
The misery index.
Even last night.
Dinger's crying, man.
It was a 14-run lead. Everybody on Rockies Twitter is like, oh, well, wait till they blow it. It'll be so Rockies if they lose this game. Us included. So whatever. I understand that. But the whole point of this year was to see steps in the right direction. And how can you say we're not seeing that right now?
Yeah, no, I am fully with you. I at the same time. Well, first, just let me jump in real quick. That 1995 team is one of the most remarkable teams in franchise history. The best starter on that staff was Kevin Ritz, who went 11-11 with a 4.21 ERA, a 4.15 FIP, and pitched in 31 games. 28 of those were starts. What held that team together through spit and bubblegum and luck was that bullpen that Anthony was talking about, the only bullpen in franchise history to post an ERA under 4. But this is what did it, and this is a common thread that you see throughout Rocky seasons in franchise history. They have to have a handful of guys who can handle a massive workload and do it effectively. That year, it was a trio of Darren Holmes, Curtis Laskanik, and Steve Reed. And beyond those, there were some guys who were effective in guys like Mike Munoz, Bruce Ruffin when he was healthy. Even, you know, to the extent that Roger Bailey pitched at times in the rotation, at times in the bullpen, he was effective at some point. But listen to the numbers for those three guys. Darren Holmes went 6-1 out of the bullpen with a 3.24 ERA and a 3.16 FIP. Curtis Laskanik was really the MVP of that team. He pitched in 76 games with a 3.40 ERA and a 2.86 FIP. Steve Reed pitched in 71, put up an ERA of 2.14 and a FIP of 3.25. When people say it can't be done, yes, it can. Because
Curtis Laskanik.
Yeah, when Coors Field was on the moon, it could be done.
Curtis Laskanik struck out 107 batters in 98 innings, only walked 33, and had a 3.40 ERA.
Good God.
It could be 98 done. Innings out of the bullpen that year, did Curtis Laskanik.
That's insane. That is insane. Bruce Ruffin only pitched in 37 games that year, but put up an ERA of 2.12, and I think was hurt for part of that season. But, you know, that's what, when people say, no, the Rockies, you can't build a pitching staff. Yeah, they can. They have in the past. They can again. But that team was incredible. But no, I agree with your point at large, which is you can't look at the way things have gone and say this team is not, as of right now, showing the signs of what you need to see for them being on the right track, because you're getting contributions in big ways from guys that you really, really want to be part of this thing going forward in a big fashion. And you're getting signs from guys who are really starting to surprise you, I think, in large stretches as to, this is somebody who you really could see having a role. I mean, Chris Russon last night, you know, it doesn't throw all that great, but the start before that against Arizona, had he not been on a pretty heavy pitch count limit because he was coming in that transitional phase from being in the bullpen to being a starter, 5 innings, 1 hit, 6 strikeouts, 3 walks. He threw 76 pitches, only 44 of them for strikes. So it wasn't like he was dominant, but he was effective when he was missing too. And that's somebody that you need, guys like that, because not everybody is going to stay healthy all the time. Not everybody is going to give you one of those seasons where they can go out every 5 days and everything's going to be fine from wire to wire. You need those guys. So you're seeing signs from guys who aren't necessarily the front liners that are still encouraging you.
And the important thing with the bullpen that we were talking about with the Reeds and the Ruffins and the Liscanics, that year in 95, it was interesting because those guys put up those numbers as they did, but they had like about a 3-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. They didn't walk a lot of guys at all. I believe all those guys had walks per nine around 3 or better, which is pretty good for a reliever. Right now, the Rockies bullpen, they are 9th in all of baseball in walks per nine. They are not killing themselves, which is so important. They're 2nd in the National League in walks per nine as a bullpen behind the Washington Nationals. This team does not, or right now at least, is not killing themselves, which is what the Rockies have always seemed to do, especially coming out of the bullpen. It's almost like if you can pitch, this team might stay in some games.
It's
if you
almost
don't kill
like
yourself.
That's an accurate assessment. I mean, we talked about it a ton. And does this mean that Jeff Breidich has a successful thing he can plot on his resume already and say, yeah, man, look, I fixed the Colorado Rockies? Absolutely not. But what we have sort of deemed the Breidich doctrine is guys who throw strikes and guys who throw hard. And so far, those guys have been extraordinarily effective. Carlos Estevez has looked brilliant in stints this season. Obviously, Miguel Castro, who you hope to see back soon, and you kind of worry that we haven't really heard an update on Miguel Castro. Miguel Castro was absolutely brilliant in his time. And the guys that the Rockies are going to rely on in huge ways going forward who fit that bill, those guys have been very good. Look at Gonzalez Hermen. Gonzalez Hermen has pitched in 6 games and put up an ERA of 2.70.
Gonmen.
Yeah, that guy. So, again, not ready to just deem it, oh, yeah, this is a huge success, and Jeff Breidich is vindicated, but we're starting to see you lay the seeds down, and you pour some water on them, and you hope the sun comes out enough that you can start to see little things bursting through the soil. That's where we are right now with the Jeff Breidich plan.
That's a nice little metaphor.
Thank you. It's springtime, and that's really all I can think about. It's like, oh, God, it's not going to snow anymore, which it probably will.
It will.
But,
you've said that, yeah.
That is what you have to look at. When you are the Rockies, you have to look at the signs that things are working. And, yeah, it's early. And yeah, it's a relatively small sample size, but this is what the Rockies are planning on being successful here, and it is showing signs that it can work.
And that's all you ask for.
Yeah.
That is absolutely all you ask for at this point in the season. It is May 6th. We are still talking positively about the Colorado Rockies. How about that?
First place, Colorado Rockies.
Your first place. Colorado Rockies.
By the way, let's talk some prospects because that is one thing that we love to do on this show. Last time out, 5 days ago, Jeff Hoffman for the AAA Albuquerque Isotopes in the launching pad that is Reno's Aces Ballpark. Actually, now they call it Greater Nevada Field. 7 innings pitched, 3 hits, 0 runs, 0 walks, 6 strikeouts for Jeff Hoffman, who lowers his Pacific Coast League ERA to 1.52 through 5 starts. This time last week, I said, I don't see any way Jeff Hoffman comes up because he's not on the 40-man. It's a complicated process to get him on there. You got to DFA somebody. Somebody has to lose a job out of it. Jeff Hoffman keeps doing this. They're not going to hold him back.
Your first place, yeah. Albuquerque Isotopes,
yeah,
as well. They're 16-12, tops in the Pacific South Division.
And they started slow.
Yeah.
But the Topes are coming on. So I rescind my earlier declaration that there's no way Jeff Hoffman, because, you know, and at some point, again, at some point it's going to blow up. At some point, Jeff Hoffman will go out and he'll have one of those PCL type of days where it's just ugly. He goes 6 innings, he gives up 6 runs, 5 earned, whatever it is. Because that happens in the PCL and it happens in baseball. But as of right now, Jeff Hoffman is dominating. And the thing is, you can look at it and say, yeah, but look, he's only pitched on the road. And yes, on the road, Jeff Hoffman has been very good.
He pitched on the road
at a PCL pitcher's park one time. He's pitched on the road 4 out of his 5 starts, but one of those starts was in a pitcher's park. And in that game against Tacoma in his opener, he went 6 innings, 5 hits, no runs, 3 walks, 6 strikeouts. After that, he gets a win at Reno, going 6 innings on the 14th, then gets a no decision at Las Vegas, giving up 2 runs on 6 hits, on 5 hits over 6 innings, and then last time out against Reno. Reno and Las Vegas, that's the exact same thing as Albuquerque or worse.
Yeah, or Colorado Springs.
Especially Vegas or Colorado Springs, yeah. So it's not like John Gray's going out and he's, you know, pitching in Scranton, Wilkes-Barre or in Buffalo or in wherever. The PCL, it's not some cakewalk once you get outside of Albuquerque.
No. And do you remember in his worst start of the season, 3 2/3, 6 hits, 3 runs, 1 earned against Reno at home, where after the game, manager Glenn Allen Hill said, I didn't like Jeff's tempo, and I took him out because of that. He was taking too much time. Yes. We'll address that in the next, you know, his next start, basically. Well, since then, you don't want to see what Jeff Hoffman has done? He has given up 2 earned runs in 13 innings. He's gone at least 6 innings in each of his 2 starts since that time. He's struck out 11. He's walked just 3, opponents hitting 178 off Jeff Hoffman in that time. So whatever Glenn Allen Hill told him, whatever the coaching staff was mentioning to Jeff about maybe improving his pace a little bit on the mound, something worked. And right now, Jeff Hoffman has been absolutely sensational since that moment.
I don't know what the move will be, but if the Rockies are still hanging around in June or July or whatever, and Jeff Hoffman continues doing what he's doing, yeah, then I think you'll see him at Coors Field at some point this season. I'm ready to jump on that bandwagon.
I'll take it. Yeah.
Ready to do it.
The bus. Yeah.
Drive the bus. Let's go down a couple more levels. One of the guys who I've been a big fan of for a while now and who has really, really started to come on in the conversation of Rockies pitching talent is a guy who was a second-round draft selection, not somebody who just came out of nowhere, but Ryan Castellani, who is, according to MLB Pipeline, number 17 prospect in the Rockies organization, a couple of nights ago, 1 hit, 10 strikeouts, goes 10 innings, and just flat-out dominated in a victory over Lake Elsinore, a 3-0 win for the Class A advanced Modesto Nuts on Tuesday.
The Modesto Nuts.
As I was talking into it, I was like, I know he's going to jump in. This is going to be beautiful and right on cue, man. God, we're like an old married couple, but one that doesn't hate each other. I love it.
We can finish each other's sandwiches, too.
Ryan Castellani, very good. And the thing I loved about it, I wrote the story on Ryan's start for MILB.com. This is what I loved about Ryan Castellani. He said that it wasn't just, oh, I was going out and all my stuff was great and whatever. This is what he told me. He said, quote, doing the spray chart, I was getting a feel for them. And that's a reference to the night before his start. He's sitting behind the plate with a couple other pitchers. You're charting pitches. You're charting where guys are hitting balls. You're charting whatever it is, pitch counts, pitch types, yada, yada. A lot of teams do it differently. But that was what he said. Really led him into the start of his good day against Lake Elsinore. He continued and said, this is my first year doing a spray chart at any level, so I seem to benefit from it the night before a start. When you get or four times through a lineup, you can see the tendencies. It's pretty amazing, honestly. It just helped me so much going into tonight, what they did last night, what pitches, and just how to approach them first time through, second time through, third time through, all that. If you have a guy who is that mindful, is that present in the moment of, no, this can help me out tomorrow, man, I really like that a lot.
Yeah, that's what you should be doing when you're 20 years old, just turned 20 earlier this month. So Ryan Castellani, if he's learning these things that he didn't have access to before he got to Modesto this year, man, that's awesome. Your first really big season up in high A ball, right now second in the California League in strikeouts with 36. Yency Almonte, he's also tied for fifth in that strikeouts as well. The guy they got for Tommy Kahnle. They got for Tommy Kahnle in that trade too. So there's a lot of good pitching right now in Modesto as well. But Ryan Castellani, last year, 27 starts in Asheville, had 94 Ks, a 4.45 ERA, only allowed 5 home runs in Asheville last year, which is actually pretty impressive. Only allowed 1 so far in Modesto this season. But there's a lot of arms here. And even without Antonio Senzatella, who has been pretty much shut down since coming out of that second start, abbreviated second start early this season, there are guys that are kind of taking his place among Rockies pitchers who are climbing up that chart where you go, okay, maybe there's something here with these guys. Maybe there's a lot of things we can look forward to with some of these pitchers, guys who are playing in really tough pitchers' parks, like in the California League or even in Asheville. Guys are putting up real, real numbers right now. And the Yard Goats, they've played every game on the road so far, and they've won pretty much every game this season. So, see, there you go.
The Hartford God Goats.
Eat it up.
Eat it up. By the way, you can pick up this month's edition of Rockies Magazine, and there is a feature story in there from yours truly about the old goats. and the move and the rebrand and the ballpark and all that kind of stuff. So do that.
Speaking of the GOATs, let's keep this moving. So we talked about Ryan Castellani, talked about Jeff Hoffman. Let's talk about some pitchers who are doing well in Hartford. Let's start with Kyle Freeland. Kyle Freeland was awful last night. He was just terrible. He was the worst. He gave up 3 runs in 7 innings. He had given up 3 runs combined over his previous 5 starts. Gross. So, you know, whatever, Kyle Freeland. But did have a season-high 7 strikeouts. Did Freeland give up only 5 hits, 1 home run. But his ERA ballooned all the way to 1.42 in that game, where he actually took down Harrisburg 8-4 was the final in that one. So
the
Kyle Freeland
cannot lose.
Yeah, they really can't. It's impossible for them to lose right now. Kyle Freeland, strikeout numbers a little bit down, but coming into the last starts, you like seeing 7 strikeouts in 7 innings. Has just 24 punchouts in 38 innings on the season, but opponents hitting 212. He's walked only 7 batters, only given up the 1 home run the entire season in his 38 innings. And it's been pretty much an even split in terms of, it's funny, they still have home and away games, these splits,
yeah,
which is fun.
Because they're all away games.
Yeah, because they're all away games. But I love the only 7 walks and only the 1 home run allowed, too. I know it's been in the Eastern League, there's a lot of weather going on the East Coast in the early going. You're pitching in some, you know, cooler climate sometimes, but it doesn't matter. Kyle Freeland has been just shoving right now. And that whole team, I mean, that team ERA is absurd. There's no way this can be right, right? They have the team has a 1.83 ERA.
I wouldn't think so.
I don't think that's accurate.
Hang on, let me see what I got. Let me see what I got for you. Me. That'd be nice, though.
That'd be wonderful, wouldn't it? That'd
be quite amazing. Let's see what the old GOATs. By the way, the GOATs will be playing some games in. I got 1.83.
I got 1.83. I didn't even realize that they have a 1.83 team earned run average.
That really is accurate.
1.8 team ERA. That is the best ERA for any minor league team in baseball right now.
Holy crap. That is accurate.
We not know this? And we know they're the best team in minor league baseball. They're 20-6. They have any minor league team.
They've given up their total amount of runs. Their total runs given up is 65. Their earned runs is 49. Their total runs, 10 fewer than the next fewest earned runs for any staff in the Eastern League. Trenton and Binghamton have both given up 75 earned runs this year. Holy cow.
Yeah. The Charlotte Stone Crabs have given up 61 earned runs. They are second in earned runs allowed, and the Yard Goats have 49.
Wow.
See, we're learning things, even while we're doing the podcast. This is why we have production meetings.
This is amazing. Yeah, that's pretty good. That is pretty good with baseball. By the way, what I was going to say, the GOATs will be playing in the state of Connecticut for the first time coming up 6 days from now. They moved 3 series to Norwich, the former home of the AA Norwich Navigators, now the home of the Connecticut Tigers in the short season Class A New York Penn League. The GOATs have moved 3 series there, May 12th to the 15th against the New Hampshire Fisher Cats, May 16th to the 18th against the Akron Rubber Ducks, and May 23rd to the 26th against the Bowie Bay Sox. The weird thing about that one, those two teams will play a doubleheader on May 24th, and then they're actually going to take the 25th and 26th both off. And the remaining game of that series will be made up at a later date, I would assume, at Dunkin' Donuts Park when that gets all finished off. But then I believe that the GOATs are on the road for one more series and then finally get to kick off the home portion of their schedule at Dunkin' Donuts Park. So they will be playing, they play on the road at Portland from May 27th through the 30th, and then they go home, to open things up on May 31st against the Trenton Thunder at Dunkin' Donuts Park. So if you're out in Connecticut or anywhere, you know, within a train ride or a short drive, you can actually see the GOATs play on relatively home-ish soil in Norwich, Connecticut, coming up.
I believe May 17th is the handoff day. We're supposed to be getting the stadium pretty much done so they can go look at it and make sure everything is all up to speed. And then basically 2 weeks, you get your chance to open up that ballpark. But right now it is a situation that sucks for everyone, because if it's not ready on May 17th and not ready by May 31st, like, how do you do that to a franchise? But right now that Wow, that stadium situation is not great in Hartford right now, but it's coming up there. Hopefully it'll be done by May 31st, and this will be a hilarious anecdote.
It'll be fun.
Yeah, we'll see.
The Biloxi Shuckers last year, when they opened their park in June, they walked off in their first game. That was our 2015 MILB Game of the Year, and I got to write that story, so go read it. Maybe the Goats will do the same.
But, I mean, the Yard Goats are 20-6.
With a 1.83 staff ERA.
That's unbelievable.
What?
I thought that was a typo.
I did, too. I was like, there's no way that that's right.
There's absolutely no way that's right.
Their staff ERA is almost a run and a half lower than any other staff's ERA. It's 1.23 runs lower than the Trenton Thunder's 3.06. You would look at 3.06 and say, damn, Trenton's doing some work on the mound. 1.83? What in the hell? I can't develop pitching. Pitching's always going to be terrible.
Drafting developing is a scam.
Holy God. That's amazing. So anyway, the Goats are good. Also, the Goats, by the way, David Dahl is in the midst of a 10-game hitting streak. Dahl has such a weird stat line. David Dahl and Trevor Story have basically had the exact same season, two levels apart. David Dahl right now is hitting .268, but he's OPSing .959 thanks to a .588 slugging percentage, 8 homers, 17 runs batted in this year.
The .372 OBP is pretty good, too.
Yeah, that's pretty good as well.
Walks. He struck out 32 times in 25 games, but the 15 walks you take, that's a great slash line.
Trevor Story is batting .268 with a .988 OPS because he's homered 11 times in his 112 at-bats this season. He's slugging .652, and obviously, yes, the strikeouts in all but two of his professional games at the major league level. So the on-base percentage is at .336, and he struck out 43 times in 27 games. But yeah.
I just love that Nolan will never let Trevor take the home run lead from him.
I know, right? Every time Trevor's like, over, Nolan's like, nope, sorry.
Not far. Bye. See ya later. Bye. Yeah.
So David Dahl, I mean, David Dahl is very good at baseball. Raimel Tapia seems like he's starting to get it figured out. Tapia is only batting .214, but I still like what he's doing in his approach. 14 strikeouts, 9 walks this season. He does have hits now in 4 of his last 6 games, including a multi-hit performance last night. He went 2-for-4 with a home run, his third of the season for Hartford, taking on Harrisburg. 6 games ago, I should say, he went 3-for-4 in a Hartford matchup with Harrisburg back in what was technically a home game on April 27th. So it seems like he's kind of starting to get there. I mean, you know that Tapia, he's always going to be the guy who finishes the season, you know, .313 average, whatever. But AA is tough. AA is the time where you really start separating guys out. So we'll see. We'll see how he starts to round into form, because it's not rare for young guys to really start getting shoved at the early stages of a season at AA. But can he adjust and get back to being Tapia?
What I do like from him is that he is a career high walk rate and a career low strikeout rate. And that's just proving that he is adjusting. Like the 14 strikeouts, the 9 walks, and the 24 games, 98 at bats, that's always very good. So just the fact that he's improving his approach in that respect, I think that's a good sign. And we'll see better things from Raimel Tapia at the end of the year. Let's move down. We kind of jumped around.
Two steps on the ladders from
AAA to Modesto back to Hartford. And now let's go down to the South Atlantic League, where some guy, I believe his name is Brendan Rodgers. He scared us a little bit on Sunday. He was hitting the wrist, had to lead the game. He was a lot of pain. There was reported he was down on the ground. We're like, oh no, what's happening? Can we not have nice things? He's fine. He is fine because in his first game back, he went 3-for-4 with 3 doubles. And then the following night, which was yesterday, he went 2-for-5 with his 6th home run of the year, drove in 3. He is now slashing .366, .438, .667, good for an 11.05 OPS. He has 6 home runs, 22 runs batted in. He has 10 doubles as well. He has only struck out 17 times in 24 games. He has walked 9 times. And oh yeah, he is 19 years old.
Good at baseball. Good at baseball. 24 games in, that is, for Brendan Rodgers. That is pretty good. And the thing I also like about Brendan Rodgers,
he has multi-hit games in 8 of his last 10 games. Multi-hits in 8 of his last 10 games.
God. He's only posted a 1 game with a single hit since April 22nd. And he's only posted one hitless game over that time as well.
Oh my God.
Rodgers, I mean, Asheville's McCormick Field is a good offensive environment, but at
usually
home,
for only lefties, though.
Yeah. At home, slashing 404, 491, 787, but on the road, slashing 326, 380, 543. So ordinarily, I think you would look at those away numbers and go, damn, that kid is killing it. And compared to his home numbers, they look almost paltry. And that's a 923 OPS and a 326 average. Good God. And he's 19.
Yeah. Two for two in stolen bases, too.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah. So he's good. I mean, I think.
Is this the most optimistic podcast we've ever had?
Yeah. What? I think the moms got us started off well.
Yeah. I think the moms were like, it put us in a good frame of mind. Yeah. And then just a lot of good things happening. Yeah. The 10-run inning last night.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the most optimistic podcast we have ever had. Yeah, whatever.
I have to give the Giants broadcast crew their due, by the way. Mike Kruko was on the color while Dwayne Kuiper was over on the radio side last night during that 13-run fifth inning. And Kruko was like actually pretty even-handed about things. And then later on in the broadcast, Kruko could not stop raving about what it was. And a lot of people forget. Dwayne Kuiper was part of the original broadcast team for the Rockies with Charlie Jones. And God, you look at the legends the Rockies had early on. Charlie Jones and Dwayne Kuiper. I mean, that's holy cow. That's an awesome broadcast team. And unfortunately, I was too young to really remember it. But so, I mean,
Dave Campbell was there too.
Yeah, Dave Campbell was there also. So the Rockies have been, obviously they've been very familiar, you know, Kruko and Kuiper have been familiar with the Rockies since the outset, but Kruko was so complimentary about what it was like in Denver when the Rockies got a team, when the city got a team, the Rockies came, the energy surrounding it. Actually, we'll hear from, Lucille Mon about that coming up in a little bit as well, but that was really cool. But in the fifth inning, it was not just like the Rockies are cheating. They must have juiced these balls. They're smuggling things into, you know, whatever. It was just more like, Can this just be over now? Because this is miserable. And they came back and they showed the scoreboard graphic, and Kruko took the telestrator and just crossed out the 13 and goes, "Nah, we'll just take care of that." Which is actually really entertaining. So,
oh man,
I just wanted to give some credit there where it was due.
This has been good.
Yeah, this has been fun. Yeah. Let's continue the fun. Mother's Day coming up on Sunday, and we're gonna talk with a mom, my mom, Lucille Mon, coming up after a brief pause next.
Hello.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, son.
How are you?
Who else is there, Anthony?
Hi. How are you?
Hi. I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, doing excellent on this Friday morning.
I was doing a little research, and I think I have a couple of good lines.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, let's dive into it. So, everybody, welcome. This is my mom, Lucille, and my mom. I've known my mom my entire life.
It goes way back. Yeah.
My mom and I go way back, 30, almost 31 years. Actually, a little bit more than that, I guess, when you include the previous 9 months.
When I got to know you from the very beginning.
The very beginning. Mom.
Is he as annoying as he seems in person?
God,
never. Not my boy.
When under her breath, she's saying, "You have no idea. He's so much more annoying to family." Mom, let's talk about baseball. So this is what's kind of crazy. I mean, everybody talks about like the bond between fathers and sons, and baseball is a game for fathers and sons and yada, yada.
Yeah.
And my dad and I have a great relationship. We've had a great relationship with baseball always. But my mom and I have also had a very baseball centric relationship. In fact, one of my earliest memories in life, and I don't know, Mom, if you even know this, but back in the very early days of my baseball fandom, this would have been, let's see, 1990. In the fall of 1990, I remember being outside. We lived down in the suburbs. We won't mention where. But I remember coming into the house. Like, I was outside playing. I remember coming into the house, and my mom was watching the World Series between the Reds and the A's. And that's one of my earliest memories. So baseball goes back a very long way. But you've been a baseball fan, your entire life. You grew up in New York City. My mom was born in East Harlem. What was baseball like for you growing up?
Oh, my gosh, it was great. I mean, I have been a baseball fan probably, well, certainly since I was in grade school, because at Our Lady of Mount Carmel School, we listened to the World Series Yankees and Dodgers. I remember that specifically on the radio, yes. And then, I don't know what the significance of this is, and maybe you guys know, but after
and that would have been the Brooklyn
over,
Dodgers, right? So, I mean, that's
was my research.
They played,
that
Yankees
was
and Dodgers
that.
Played, well, I mean, they played a bunch of times, but they played it 3 out of 4 years, 52, 53, and 55. And then again, actually in 56, which was the last. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I know.
So it was
I know.
All those
it was
years.
Great. But anyway, and then after that, like the kids in the neighborhood would take their sneakers, because that's what we called them back then, and throw them over the lamppost. And I hope lamppost is a word that those of you that are, you know, younger than I am know what that even means. But anyway, I don't know what the significance is of that, but maybe it's just a victory symbol. I'm not sure, but I do remember that. I do remember that. Then, in addition, coming from an Italian-American background, on Sundays we always went to my grandmother's house for dinner, and one of my uncles was pretty big into baseball, but the betting variety, you know. So we'd all kind of sit around after dinner and hope that the Yankees won, because it could have gotten ugly. But no, I should never have said that, because if my sister listens to this, she'll be saying, why do you always have to tell people about the family? But anyway, so bottom line is, I've been a baseball fan for my whole life. And when we first moved to Denver in 78, yeah, I guess that's right. There was no baseball team here, obviously, but before too long, we got one, and, you know, I've been with them for the ups and the downs.
Mostly
so
downs.
It's been many, many years.
Yeah, so with the Rockies
right.
coming in, yes, of course. With the Rockies coming into town, though, when did that love affair start with the local baseball team? Was it immediate? Was it opening day? Was it Eric Young
hitting
the home run?
It was when they announced that we were getting a team.
Okay.
I mean, even before opening day, because that was like one of the most exciting things that could happen, you know, way back then. No. So I've really enjoyed the Rockies. And like I said, good times and bad. Crybabies and no crybabies on the team. Since before, you know, we even went to opening day.
Mom, like I said, you know, I mean, growing up, obviously, I played baseball and we watched a lot of baseball, and it's always been kind of, you know, one of our things. I mean, every morning when I call my mom, we talk about the previous night's game if we hadn't talked about it that night. But when you were a kid, did you guys go? I mean, this is the era of baseball that probably fascinates me most is that three-team era in New York City. And when you were little, I mean, before the Dodgers and the Giants moved, there was the Polo Grounds, which is only 40, 50 blocks away from where you guys grew up. Ebbets Field's right across the city in Brooklyn. Yankee Stadium's right across the river from the Polo Grounds where the Giants played. I mean, do you remember really what it was like having three baseball teams, or what it was like when the Dodgers and Giants ended up decamping for California?
Well, I mean, I guess I remember it because it was a pretty big deal, but a lot of people were not very happy about it. But in our family, we were always Yankee fans. So while, I do remember it, I don't remember it being that big of a deal to us. I guess many people were very upset, especially the Dodger fans.
Yeah.
But but we were always Yankee fans. So, and not to say that we went physically to a lot of games in Yankee Stadium when we were little kids. As we got to be teens, maybe a little older, my sister and I and some friends would go. But with my parents, I don't remember going to Yankee Stadium to physically watch games.
Do you have one of those memories, like Billy Crystal always talks about the first time his father took him to Yankee Stadium? He remembers coming out of the tunnel and you see that green field for the first time. Do you remember what it was like going to those games the first few times you went?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was pretty amazing because, you know, we'd seen it on TV so many times, and you're kind of going, wow, I'm here. This is the place, you know. So, yeah, I don't specifically remember a date. I guess you might be learning that, you know, I don't remember a lot of things from many years ago. But in any event, I mean, I do remember going there. I remember going there like in the 60s when – Pope Paul, I think it was, had a mass there.
Ooh,
and
that
was very impressive. You know, that was really, really impressive. And I remember in 19, what year was it that Reggie Jackson hit the three home runs?
77, I believe.
Yeah, right before you moved.
When we were there that night. And that was very, very exciting.
Do you have
we
a ticket stub
like
for that?
Rows.
Maybe I could send it away
you
for some
sell
money.
It and, yeah,
you
could
might.
Sell it for
I don't know.
Drug money.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right. But no, I doubt it. Maybe your father has it. I'm
okay.
not sure, but
right.
I don't.
All right, dear.
I know we haven't had any popes coming to Coors Field or, you know, Mile High Stadium, whatever, but what's
well,
your favorite?
Well, there was one. Pope John Paul II
okay,
was a mile
true.
High, but that was pre-Rockies. I think that was 92.
Well, okay,
yeah,
so what is your favorite non-Pope John Paul II Rockies memory you've had since the team has been here?
Oh, gosh. I think opening day, you know, over at Mile High or whatever we called it back then, that was... I mean, beyond exciting. Just the emotion in the streets and the people being so excited and then getting in there and going, man, we're really going to have baseball here. And then, of course, when Coors Field opened, and I love Coors Field, that was fabulous too. So I think, I hate to say this, but it's more stadium related, opening day related than it is games related.
Yeah.
I've seen some good games there. And maybe fireworks related, but, you know, all things considered, I still love the Rockies.
We're talking with my mom, Lucille Mon, who normally we plug a Twitter handle. My mom's not on Twitter, so you can't go follow her anywhere, but she's very entertaining. In case you ever run into her, just say hello. She's a very entertaining person. Mom, I obviously played a decent amount of baseball. Not well, I would say, but I played some baseball. And I would imagine, like, if this was an interview where we were asking a big leaguer's parents about, like, oh, what's your favorite baseball memory? With me, it would probably be when I got my teeth knocked out.
Exactly.
For those of you who don't know,
exactly.
My two front teeth are fake.
Your two front teeth?
Not a real fun experience. And I drove
Didn't
by Dry Creek.
Did you ask for Christmas?
Yeah, I mean, well, every year, still waiting on them. But, I mean, what do you remember about having to be that mom who, you know, drove around and watched your son play mediocre 3A high school baseball?
Oh, it was fun. I mean, especially the high school baseball. The little kid baseball was fun, too. Even T-ball was fun. But the high school baseball, you know, it was a bunch of great kids, and you guys were such good friends. And played, you know, well together. And I remember specifically, you know, some of your fielding plays and that type of thing. So it was, I mean, certainly it was a great experience.
So give me a scouting report on Tyler Mon, baseball player.
Yeah.
Was he a gritty scrapper? Was he a gym rat? Was he
not a gym rat.
Was he a nice glove guy up the middle? Come on, give me some info here, Lucille.
Give you some of the what?
Some info on Tyler Mon as a baseball player.
Give me a scouting report.
Ooh. Oh, boy. A scouting report. Well, I guess a couple of things. His fielding was good, and his hitting was good. His running may be a little slow. But, you know, always a team player, always encouraging everybody. That's a very brief synopsis of a scouting report.
He was the Mark Reynolds, we'll say, for the 2016 Rockies. He was the Mark Reynolds of the team.
I think that's a fair comp.
That works.
Yeah,
okay.
I think that's probably right.
Because
good.
I did strike out a ton, especially when I was a junior in high school. I struck out monstrous
amounts. A mother never remembers that. Never. No matter how old she is. Yeah,
you know,
Mother's Day's coming up, you know.
Right, exactly. She's gonna kiss up for Mother's Day. No, but in all seriousness, Mother's Day is Sunday, and my mom and I will for the first time be doing the Rockies home run for the homeless walk, which will be really cool on Sunday morning. I'm very excited about that. And then maybe a nice breakfast, and then I gotta go to work for the rest of the day. But really excited. It'll be fun.
I'm looking forward to it. It'll be very fun.
Glad we're doing the walking portion, because if we were doing the running portion, I would die like half
of
that 5K.
I wouldn't even consider it. I'd make my donation and just, you know. But the walking portion, especially the final lap, is around the track at Coors Field.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So I think that'll be really fun.
Hey, Mom. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, it was my pleasure. It was very fun.
Love you.
Now, then you have to let me know what a podcast is and where I can go to hear myself.
That's my mom,
love
everybody.
You too, son.
Bye.
Bye, Anthony.
Bye, Lucille.
Take care. Sure. Bye-bye.
Oh, my God. This is the greatest. Okay, Mom. Love you. Oh, she already hung up.
She hung up. That was hilarious. Well, he wasn't too into the running.
Oh, my God. That really would be it, too. It would be like my hit tool. Let's grade it on like a high school scale. I would say my hit tool was like probably a 60, like a 65 maybe. Like I was a good hitter.
Okay.
Fielding, I generally didn't have a problem with fielding. Now throwing a different case. And running, I would have been a 20. If there was a sub 20, I'd be a sub 20.
Oh my God, that was absolutely hilarious.
Was that bad? It's my mom, everybody.
Yeah, and my mom, she did not want to come on. I offered. She said no. Nah. She's like, I have nothing to say. I'm like, Mom, we're not here to make you look like a jerk. We're going to ask you real questions. We're not going to have
just get her with a bunch of gotcha questions.
This isn't gotcha journalism here, Mom. But okay. But anyway.
Let me ask you this about Anthony's junior season in high school.
Happy Mother's Day to my mother as well.
Mother's Day, Mrs. Masterson.
I'm sure she'll listen to this and go, oh, I could have done that. And I'll be like, I know, Mom. But we'll move on here.
Oh, my God. We're going to wrap up the show next. Moms are the coolest, man.
That was so great.
Moms are so much fun. That was adorable.
Oh, that was awesome.
My mom.
This has seriously been one of the most fun podcasts we have done.
I know. This has been terrific. I tweeted out in the middle of this that I'm not saying it lightly, but I really think that this is one of our best episodes yet. Maybe our best episode yet. I love this one.
This has been really good.
My mom ripping on how I'm slow. It's not my
genes. Well, he wasn't much for the running.
I didn't decide the gene pool. I get it. I had gap-to-gap power, man. But I
can barely
make it into second base for doubles because I'm slow. Yeah, that's going to do it. Episode number 73 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. You can find us. We're on iTunes Podcast. You can rate, review, and subscribe to the Purple Dinosaur Podcast there. You can also find us on the Stitcher app. If you are one of those Android people, you can find us as well at purplerow.com. Yeah, you are an Android person.
I am. I like them.
One of those weirdos.
I have a MacBook Air, but I like my Android.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know.
Also, buy our shirts at purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com, I believe. Do that.
Forgetting to send an email to Tyler asking if I can get some of those shirts.
He and Kirsten are going to be out here in a couple of weeks. Two weeks from today, in fact, they will be out here.
That's fun.
Yeah, for a little 5-day vacation or so. Gonna go to Harry Potter World.
Cute.
Yeah.
I've only read three of those books, but that looks like the coolest amusement park ever.
Yeah, Nicole's been a couple of times. She said it is just awesome. It's not as big as the one in Florida, but it is awesome, apparently. And they are going to be very okay with going because it's gonna be a lot of fun.
Oh my God. Yasiel Puig just tweeted a picture of himself leaning off of the edge of the CN Tower in Toronto. Like he's harnessed in. He's doing the edge walk is what it's called.
What's the hashtag?
Hashtag Puig not scared.
Oh my God. I love
him. He's the greatest.
With the giant fish, Puig hungry, hashtag sushi, Puig your friend, Puig not late. I love what Yasiel Puig has done this year without Don Mattingly breathing down his neck.
I know.
Zach Greinke too.
Oh, this picture, like, oh my God, this picture terrifies me. One time I tweeted a picture of a giant sea crab to Craig Goldstein, and Craig responded and said that he would stare at it. He would open up the tweet, stare at the picture as his heart rate started to climb, and then when he started feeling like he was on the verge of hyperventilating, he'd close it, and then he'd just do it all over again. That's what I'm going to do with this picture of Puig, because it's mortifying. But anyway. You can find the podcast on all kinds of fun places. We didn't get to any Ask PDP this week because we came in so late talking, you know, about our prospect love and our optimism and talking with some awesome moms. So next week we'll get some Ask PDP questions because we've had some really good ones come in over the last couple of weeks. And I think that's going to do it for this week's edition of the
show. What a show.
What a show. And a big thanks to Lucille Mon for joining us from, you know, like 10 minutes away from here. All right.
How about that?
Let's do it again. We'll do it again next week.
Let's do it again next week.
All right.
Your first place Colorado Rockies, guys.
Yeah.
Catch the fever.
All right, guys. Talk to you then. Bye. Bye.